All right, welcome to The Hours. I'm honored. I was texting with my friend Edward. He's like, let's connect. I said, let's record it. And so here we are. The Hours is named The Hours. So we can just like spend some hours with you, spend some time with you. Thank you to all the listeners. Thank you to our Savvy members. Edward, thank you for jumping on. Edward and I have been texting, and I recall our most recent kind of text thread is like, why do coaches do this? And both Edward and I have a heart for coaches. We are coaches. We're teachers first. I mean, Edward is just one of the best teachers that I know. I just love listening to him. So we wanted to help you on your journey, whether you're a new coach, whether you've been doing it for a long time. I know that I do many of these things that today we're going to tell you to try to stop doing. And so my hope is that I stop doing these things as much. And I challenge you to stop doing these things as much as well. Edward, before we dive in to what we want coaches to stop doing, what is one thing that's been uplifting and life-giving to you in the last month or two around basketball?
Great question. I've been working with a group of coaches virtually and in person, and just helping them see the game through more of an empowering way with their players, helping them become better teachers and less coaching, and really showing them how they are kind of already doing it and to just lean into that more, and to show them some of the old habits they have as well. They've really blossomed in doing that. It's been really fun to watch them, and they come back and share each week and they're proud of it. And, you know, hearing a coach say, hey guys, I'm going to try this today. I just learned this weekend, so bear with me. It may not go. And then he does it and the kids love it. And so it's just been really fun to see that.
Yeah, that it's amazing. I find more, I'm with you, I find even more fulfillment and enjoyment helping adults, helping coaches, than I do helping kids. I mean, I think that it's more rare that an adult really goes on a learning journey and seeks to change later in life, whereas it seems expected of kids, of youth, to like go to school, learn things, learn a sport. Whereas a lot of times as adults, we're like, okay, I'm a finished product now. I'm gonna go out in the world and do my thing. And so I think that's why I love that as well, is when an adult, and especially a leader and an influencer like a coach, says, I'm gonna learn too. And even I'm gonna learn in public and tell my athletes that I learned this new thing. That level of vulnerability is just like, it's so powerful, and I love seeing it. So me too. I'd say I've enjoyed that a ton as well.
And coaches, I think the fear is that by being in your position, it's assumed that you know everything. So you don't want to have that level of vulnerability in front of your players in fear that it lessens you, when I think you will find the exact opposite happens if you do it. They're more endeared to you. They more believe in you. It becomes one of our players. I do player calls to learn from players every Sunday night. And one of our players says, when a coach makes it a collaboration, I feel so much more interested in being a part of this team. And I think that's just really important for coaches to keep in mind. It's a collaboration.
Okay, I'm going to do a shout out here. You remember the movie Fight Club with Brad Pitt, Ed Norton? Okay, one of my favorite movies. I need to rewatch it, actually. And there's one line in that movie that Brad Pitt says, giving a speech to like all these Fight Club members. He's like, you don't want to die without any scars. I remember that line. Do you remember that line?
Yes.
Yeah. Yep. Well, I mean, but it's true, like the scars or our inadequacies or, you know, our failures are oftentimes what endear us or provide us with the authenticity with those people that we're leading. You know, it's like as a coach, bear your scars with pride. Like when you mess up, when you fail, when you get cut up, when you get beat up, you know, you don't want to go through coach without any scars. And when Absolutely. You share your scars, people trust you more.
Absolutely.
Cool. Well, let's help them out, and let's give these coaches some things not to do. One thing that I really believe, I think you believe it as well, is so oftentimes the quickest way to improvement isn't through addition, it's from subtraction. It's hard to add new skills, but it's easy just to stop doing things. And as a coach, just stop doing some of these things, and I think it'll help you. So what's the first one you would ask coaches to stop doing?
In transparency, Tyler and I talked for a few minutes before just kind of prep and get organized. And of course, I left one out. So I'm going to start with the one I left out, Tyler. So this is new for you too. Coaches, stop going to clinics for the purpose of gaining knowledge. The point of knowledge is not knowledge. The point of knowledge is action. And I believe we are entering this place where you have so many, it's great, right? You have so many avenues to resources, from clinics to things like this, to online, to podcasts, to apps. And I think coaches are collecting this knowledge like it's some kind of like warehouse or like it's an antique. It's like, and then I think it just, even bogs you down even more to teach it. So stop collecting knowledge for the sake of saying you know. Like I meet so many coaches that can pass the basketball test, but their kids don't know how to play. And it makes you dig in even more to blame in the players. Like, so stop collecting knowledge.
So good. I will just add that one of my favorite things to do is present at clinics. And one of the least valuable things I do is present at clinics. Like, so I love, true. Right? I love sharing the knowledge. And then at the end of it, I'm like, what a waste. But if it leads someone to going deeper, then I think it's valuable. Like if it's a gateway, but like, yeah, don't just go to clinics and be like, oh, I've done my professional development, you know, for the year. It's so true.
I had a coach tell me last week that a young coach tell me that they love running Dan Hurley stuff. See, I don't have to love the team.
Oh man. I mean, a lot of times that's just a status play. I feel like clinics are saying what stuff you run. It's just a status play. It's like, hey, I know this, you know, like I know this, I'm a motion coach. You know, I know this. And it's like, so what? Let's see your team play. I don't think there's any value in being a motion coach, a race and space coach, a read and react coach. It's just like, okay, can you help your team find solutions in the best way possible?
Stop telling and start teaching. You know, one of the things we do with our coaches, we have them ask their players a survey, like, do you feel things were told to you or taught to you most of the season? It's a really good starting point, right? As many AB decisions you can make on the court, great. And as many AB decisions you can get as a coach and get your players to speak through, I think is good. You know, Tyler, I know you've experienced this. I've been in gyms where you've been told this. You've been in gyms where I've been told this. It's like, oh yeah. You know, we've been telling our kids to fill in the blank, play off of 2 feet, space the floor, play with their eyes. We've been telling our kids this for years, and Edward and Tyler walk in and they get it in 2 days.
Yeah.
And it's like, if you really believe that, then like you could get the janitor to come in and just tell them different. Like that's not the magic.
If it's just right? Another voice.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And coaches don't ever ask like, well, how did you do that? They just think, oh, well, you know, they're tired of hearing us. It's like, no, there's vocabulary to this. There's layering to this. There's levels to this. There's understanding to this. Like they don't want to see how it's done, how it's made. So stop telling and start teaching.
Yeah, let me give 3 ways to do that as a teacher and then 1 way to improve as a teacher. One way to start teaching instead of telling is to actually ask questions first. When you come in as a teller, you are giving the answer. When you come as a teacher, you're asking questions. Because until you know the baseline or a player's experience or what they're focusing on, there's no way that you can help them. Like, let's say that we are focused on playing off the catch, making quicker decisions off the catch. And so we go in and we're like, teach them, like, hey, we got to make quicker decisions. But until I ask Edward, Edward, what are you trying to do when you catch the ball? Then I can't even help Edward. Edward's like, oh, I'm trying to run the play. Well, then we got to do a different thing. If Edward's saying, oh, well, I'm looking to drive it. Or if Edward's like, oh, I'm a shooter, right? So we got to know where Edward's coming from so we can actually help him. So ask questions first. One-on-one conversations. Most often tellers are screaming instructions to the entire group, right? Pass the ball, run the play, move it, don't dribble there. That's telling. Right? Whereas teaching tends to be a lot more quiet and one-on-one. The play is going on. You're not influencing the mess that's out there anyway. You know, you observe something and you pull Dane aside and say, all right, Dane, here's what I want you to do. I want you to see if you can engage 2 defenders before you make your pass next time. Get back out there. That's teaching, right? That's a solution that we've provided for Dane because we've observed that Dane is giving up the ball and letting one player stop him. Right now, that's not what every player in the gym needs to hear you scream over and over again. And while you're screaming, I actually sent a text, and this parent might actually listen to this podcast. So if you do, shout out. We had a new parent in the gym last night, just screaming instructions at their kid the entire practice, the entire one, you know, and like you could see the kid just shrinking into themselves the entire time and like looking over exasperated at their parent. Because they had no clue what the parent was actually telling them to do, right? And so I sent a text to this parent. I said, hey, telling your player what to do in the midst of is actually making them worse, which I know is the opposite of what you want. So what I would encourage you to do would be to just be quiet, observe, and give them encouragement during quiet times. Only celebrate them. And if you want to, tell them something, you can only tell them one thing at the end of practice, and it has to come after a celebration. And this parent was just like flabbergasted, like, what? How does that going to help? But that's just like a great example of telling as a coach. So I'd say provide solutions more one-on-one.
Parents and coaches, think about it like this, like take the emotion out of it. If telling them would have helped, you wouldn't be telling them anymore. You've told them. So if you're telling them again, that's the proof that the telling doesn't work. Because if telling worked, you would be having new problems.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it really, and as a parent of a daughter that has become a really good basketball player, Charlie's getting really good, Edward. You know, I'm not into youth rankings, but like I see most 9-year-olds in the state of Arizona being here in Phoenix. Like she might be the best 9-year-old in the state of Arizona, which is pretty crazy.
Let's get her an IL deal. Let's get it started.
Yeah, right. I know, right?
She's behind.
I know. She's like Euroing at 9. I'm like, I don't even believe in the Euro. Anyway, but yeah, she just consumes basketball. It's pretty nuts. But anyway, all that being said, like as a parent, I expect, and I think a lot of this as coaches and as parents is where it's sourced from, we expect our players to know things that they just don't know. And so we get frustrated and we think like, oh, they obviously know that. So if I just tell them that, they'll do it. That is an incorrect assumption. They show you what they know by what they do, right? And so telling will not change their behavior. And that's why you need to teach instead. So provide them some one-on-one solutions. Assume they do not know. Your frustration all stems from assuming that they do know. They don't know and they don't have the habit. Okay, here's the last one, then we'll let Edward riff on this a little bit. Teach the how more than the what. So telling is teaching the what, right? Here's what you do. You match up, right? That's a what, right? That's telling. Whereas teaching is every time in transition, how we transition on defense is we point, call, and repeat. That's teaching. Point at the person you're guarding, verbally call it out loudly that you're guarding that person, and then repeat it over and over again. Right? That would be teaching, right? Whereas what to do would be match up, right? That's telling. And so there's a difference between the how and the what. Focus more on the how and you'll be a better teacher.
This is for coaches and players. I'll have players, or now my coaches do it too, but I have players that will do something in the games or in our gym or whatever. And, you know, players I watch on TV, they'll text me after a game and, hey, and we always laugh because sometimes the answer is basketball is hard. And what parents and coaches do when they act like this or react like this is it's just a really lack of truly appreciation of how hard basketball is. Like the silo skills, the Legos, like we call them, the Legos, like stopping and these things that you can just, you transfer, they're easy in theory. You add pressure, you add confusion, you add reads, and you add all these things in, things get hard fast. And basketball is really hard. And when you are afraid of certain results or responses, it gets even harder. So I think we just need an appreciation for how hard it is. And then as a coach, how much harder we make it with all these things. And this is part of the telling, not teaching. And I'll give an application here real quick. And then we move is stop telling them to do things in a game and remind them of what they know, i.e. Tyler, shoot the ball. Like that's not the answer. The answer is Tyler, what did you see? This is, and we could do a whole nother podcast on this, but the way coaches telling themselves, because if, by me saying, hey, Tyler, what did you see? That reminds Tyler that I've taught him how to read a defender and play his eyes. But if I can't say that to Tyler because I haven't taught it to him, then you're going to be a victim of the game anyway. So if you've done the teaching, you got to sit in it in the game. You got to just believe in it and remind them of what they know. And that's so much more empowering and it's going to get you more long-term than it will in that exact moment.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's a great segue. So that was all about stop telling and start teaching. Your Tyler shoot the ball will transition us to my next don't is don't give rules. So Tyler shoot the ball is a beautiful example. Okay. Tyler shoot the ball. I'm going to specify that as a rule, right? So I hear that as Tyler. I'm like, oh, my rule is shoot the ball, Right. So now all of a sudden I go out there and I shoot the ball, even if it's the wrong read at the wrong time or whatever, because it was a rule. Where instead of providing rules, and Edward gave a great example of it, is you want to give them principles, right? And so if you've taught them principles, you just remind them of the principle like you did. Like, what did you see? Oh, well, we've established principles of big advantage, shoot it, small advantage, drive it, no advantage, move it. Those would be principles of play, not rules. And rules hurt you, I think, both from a basketball standpoint, but also I think in a standard standpoint in leading your program, right? Like, if you're ever late, you don't play in the next game, right? That would be an example of a rule. Whereas a principle or a standard would be, well, we expect to show up early in order to sweep the gym floor, get better on our own. It's just the expectation. But we understand that if your mom, who is a single mother working three jobs and is late from work, can't pick you up and you're 10 minutes late, but I've made this rule, it wasn't kids' fault, right? And I've made this rule, now the entire team suffers because the kid's one of the better players on the team, and now they're gonna lose a game that could allow them to play in the postseason because of a stupid rule, right? So don't provide rules, instead establish standards and values that we can mutually agree to uphold, recognizing that in any given situation, maybe Tyler shouldn't shoot the ball, and maybe David shouldn't not get to play in the game because he was 5 minutes late.
It's so, so true. I mean, and coaches, like, everything is an opportunity to teach. And rules don't, you think rules teach? Rules don't teach. Rules are black and white. And then it becomes areas of gray. And coaches, you do it to yourself. Oh, Edward favors Tyler. It's like, oh, he didn't favor Tyler, but Tyler had the exception to the rule that, of course, I'm not going to like be mad because the single mom can't get him there. But I didn't make that a rule. I did it to myself versus making it standardized, right? Or I'm sorry, making it standards and you living in the gray, but you can define the gray. Hey, we expect you to be on time. If you can't be on time, we expect you to communicate. We expect you to prioritize our practice time, our program, our whatever. Like, we lay out expectations. And then coaches, that gives you room to discern. That gives you room to communicate. That gives you room to make everything a lesson to your team. Hey, yeah, Tyler was late today, but he's never late, and he's late because his mom. So we have understanding for that. So now that kid that maybe has to, man, coach, I'm going to be late. I got to do a makeup test. I know coach is going to understand that. You know how much more endearing that is and how much that helped build and strengthen your culture and your relationships that you build with your players? But we think we're doing the opposite by giving these hard rules. For what?
Yeah. I mean, I'm just going to give another small example that's just very recent. Hopefully these examples help. I'm sorry if they don't. Just skip ahead 30 seconds. There's a kid that I've worked with for a while. This kid got kicked off their team this year for punching a locker at a halftime. Like, has some trouble managing their emotions, but really talented kid. And so I invited this kid to come with me to a practice and run this Friday. And so I could have approached it and said, like, hey, Jay, you can come, but if you have an emotional outburst, I'm going to kick you out of practice, right? That would be a rule. I'm just giving examples, right? If then. But what I did instead was, hey, Jay, you're going to come and I'm going to ask you to commit to being a room lifter, an energy giver, and a positive leader. Can you commit to that? Right? So there's no rule. There's no consequence associated with it. I'm asking for this player to agree to a standard, right? And then, of course, if that standard isn't upheld, then we've got a decision to make. But really, what we have an opportunity to do when that standard isn't met is we have an opportunity to teach, because we just assume they don't know any better.
If you have created the environment, the culture, like, is the better place for that kid outside of that environment, like, to kick him out? Like, if he has that anger issue, if he has that whatever, that comes from somewhere else. We've all been there. Some of us still maybe dance in those bad areas of our life. But like, is the better, you're telling me the better place for that young man or young woman is outside of your environment, to where someone else is going to let him just start the cycle over again? Like, why would we not love on him even more and help him get through that, get past that? Like, that's the challenge. It's not about the ball now.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's beautiful. Okay. It's not about the ball now. Let's actually segue into my other one. Then we'll go back to yours, because I think these are great just connections here. Stop ruining their day. Okay. If players consistently leave practices or games and they're sad, more depressed, have lower self-esteem, right? Are more frustrated. If that's like common, then I think you're doing it wrong. I think you're doing it wrong. You have 2 hours. And for many people, this is the 2 hours that people that love the game, this is the 2 hours they're looking forward to most in their entire lives, right? And so I think first and foremost, stop having someone's experience, emotional state come at the expense of you trying to win a game. Because here's the truth of the matter. If that happens for a long period of time, you're actually going to underachieve as a coach. And you won't be in it very long. Instead, I have one coach that I work with that it was his first year coaching college. He was a longtime high school coach. He finally got his first college job. He was coaching JUCO, earned it. And he had one goal for the season because we were debriefing after the season. His one goal for the season is he wanted his practice to be the best part of his player's day. I mean how amazing and beautiful is that? And I asked him, I'm like, how did your season go? And he said, I achieved my goal, right? And I'm like, that's a savvy coach right there.
You went 24-6?
I think it went like 6-24 actually, but he achieved awesome. His goal. You know what I mean? Awesome, right? Awesome. And they got better, and now he's gonna actually get to recruit, and all of his players are coming back. I mean, how rare is that? All his players are coming back, and when recruits come in, they hear from the players like, man, it was such a great experience. That's how you build a program, right? Especially, I mean, as we know, like participation is down, especially in girls basketball in high school, right? Because of this right here. Stop ruining players' day. It should be enjoyable to be in your gym.
Tyler, man, I just love that you wanted to talk about that. I think that is worthy of a different podcast with us, to be honest with you. You know, I went to a lot of state tournaments, boys and girls, in actually a couple of different states over the last couple of weeks. And what's interesting is, you know, I think there are players that when the season ends, they're relieved, and there are players when the season ends, they just can't let it go. And I watched teams win third place, second place, and they were like, and you couldn't tell who won or lost because they were like, oh, thank God it's over. Like they're taking their jersey off on the court. And I watched other teams, and I knew all these teams I was speaking of, right? And I know the culture. And I watched other teams. It was like, they just cannot take, like they're coming out to hug their family with their jersey still on. They can't take it off for the last time. They just can't, because they know when they take it off, that's it. And you could see it in their face, like, I'm just holding on as long as I can. And you can see other teams like, they're off right away. And that goes back to time. Like, you know how many days have been ruined that they can't wait to get that chapter closed? And then the other side is how many days have been made. And like, I'm still a part of it. That's just so huge. So this is so funny that because just yesterday I had, this is a really cool moment, and this will speak a lot to what Tyler's talking about. One of the college boys we work with is now working with a club team where he plays college, and they're getting started, and he's coaching, I think, like an 8th grade team or 10th grade, doesn't matter. And he shows up and he's getting to know people, and he meets the old coach who coached that group last year, and now he's coaching a different group. And he's like, you know, I'll just use different names. He said, you know, tell me about Michael. And he sees this kid kind of off shooting by himself. And, you know, Michael's a 7th grader and he's not that good. By the way, coaches and players, 7th graders aren't supposed to be good. That's why we're here. So the coach is like, oh yeah, you know, he's not that good. And I didn't play him a lot last year. He just kind of is out here. You know, last year he was only a practice player. I didn't even let him play in the games. So then, you know, my guy goes up and starts shooting with Michael. Hey, Michael, how you doing? He's kind of quiet. You like basketball? Yeah, I love it. You play any other sports? No. So now stop there. Loves basketball. Doesn't play any other sports. Not good. Okay, fine. So Michael, where are you from? Now this guy is on the East Coast, Eastern Seaboard, like up by Massachusetts. Okay. Michael, where are you from? Florida. Oh, so my guy trying to have fun. He goes, oh, that's a long commute. He goes, oh no. Well, I live here now, but I'm from Florida. Oh, well, what brought you up here? Oh, well, my dad died and my mom and I had to come live with my aunt so my mom could have a job. So you know what happens now. My guy is like, Michael's his dude. Like he's going to make sure Michael loves it. Right. So he goes back to the coach from last year. He goes, you know where Michael's from? And the coach says, yeah. And he names it down there in. He had him for a whole year.
Yeah, that's so good.
He had him for a whole year. And that's so much bigger than basketball, guys. Who cares about the ball?
And I mean, that's so beautiful. And like, when, other than basketball, when else is an adult going to have an in-depth conversation with a 7th grader in that scenario, especially an adult that 7th grader is going to look up to, because of your knowledge and skill in something that they really, really care about. You know, like it's instant connection and power to speak in to the life of these young people. And it's power that can be used for good or for evil. I mean, because they're hanging on every word. And we've all seen this player. I had a new player in the gym yesterday who I could just tell this player has been, for lack of a better word, abused by coaches. Because every time I stopped to teach, defensive, right? I'm about to be told how bad, you've seen it as well, right? And so I'm just like, oh man, like heartbreaking, right? And so it's heartbreaking. And by the end of the session, they were actually smiling, right? And it's like, oh my God. And like they knew it's okay. You don't have to like grind every time you're in the gym and be afraid of making mistakes. And it's the power of life and death in the tongue. And we hold that as coaches. So, I mean, I cannot urge you enough, coaches, and thank you for even listening to something like this. And hopefully it can move us all. And I'm moved by it as well. And so I'm excited to just go and try to light some more people up whenever I get to be in the gym.
There's nothing more important.
Yeah.
And by the way, coaches, like at the end of the day, if you have players that you've invested in and not have these transactional relationships, the ball just finds its way in the hole more. Like you just turn the ball over less. It's just weird. Mm-hmm. That's actually not weird. They believe.
Yeah. It's so true. Yeah. Well, okay. All right. Let's give them, I think that was really good. Let's give them a couple more of your don'ts in as we get a little bit more specific here.
Sure. Stop going away from what works. I think coaches have this fear of, well, we just ran it at work. They're going to stop it. And truthfully, that should be great because if they stop it, it should open something else. If you've taught concepts and principles and get the game the right way and basketball is improv for you, not a script. I think that's a good thing. It's like going fishing. It's like, okay, well, I found a good fishing hole. I caught a fish. Well, don't throw your line back in. We just caught one. Go somewhere else. Like, we would never do that. So the other day I'm watching a women's college game. Okay. And then after that, watch an NBA game. So this is what happens, right? So the team playing has a really athletic guard, lefty. And so you're facing the rim. She has the ball dead center. They run a ghost screen to the right side, and they have their best shooter loaded in the left corner. Okay? They have their athletic big in the dunker spot on the right corner, which then ends up being weak side. They run the ghost screen. She comes off it downhill to the left side, gets it wide open layup. Next play down, they enter it to the high post and run split action. Yeah. So fast forward to the next game I watch the Laker game. They run a flat screen with Jackson Hayes and Luka. Luka comes
the
in.
Next 20 possessions.
Correct. so much so the other coach calls a timeout. It's like, do you not see what they're running? They get a lob three. Luka gets a snake and a foul and one. They get a kick to the corner. They get an advantage ball swing to the third side of the floor to driving a closeout. That's it. That's all they did.
I mean, that's just gospel right there. That's so good. Yeah. You don't need more plays. You don't need better plays. You just need to develop better players and put them in their positions of strength and let them go. And everyone's going to have more fun. And your job's going to be a lot easier as well as a coach.
And if you're going to do that, by the way, coaches, stop trying to win games early in your season. Like if you do that, that folds it right into another stop. Stop trying to win games early in your season. Use games early in your season as sparring.
Because the early in your season, identify that thing that works and make it work better over and over and over again. And that's early in the season. And we know that in order to make it work better, it's going to take mistakes and failure early in your season. The teams that tend to do really well late are not the teams that are undefeated. The teams that do really well late are like the, you know, 24-5 teams or whatever it is. I've seen a lot of teams go, whatever it is, 25-1, and that one loss was like state championship or whatever, you know, Final Four, because they actually didn't get through the mess early.
Stop having long post-game talks. They're not listening. They're not going to take anything away from it. They already know. They're more upset than you are. And you're going to do it again anyway, and you're devaluing your own words. Stop having post-game talks.
It's easy, it's actionable, and it's also a way to not ruin someone's day. Most post-game talks that you have, and the long ones, only make everyone feel worse about themselves. That's the only outcome. Everyone else feels worse. You maybe feel a little bit better as the coach because you're able just to like have a therapy session in public.
But then you bring it in and go 1, 2, 3 family after you just tongue lashed him for 10 minutes. It's like, yeah, it's great.
Okay. It's all okay. That's how me and my wife in our arguments as well. Hey, bring it in. 1, 2, 3, family.
It's the same difference, the same principle. It's like,
oh, that's so funny. All right. Well, coaches, I know that you got a little better here today. These are things to stop doing. Edward, it's always a pleasure to learn from you. If one of our coaches wants to come and find you, learn more from you, where should they come to find you?
Yeah, CourtSessions.com, Edward@CourtSessions.com. Yeah, easy to find me.
Easy to find him, CourtSessions.com. Not easy to hang out with my friend Edward because we're in different states, but we're going to make it happen. It might happen. I don't know where it's going to happen this year, but it's going to happen sometime.
I'm coming to Phoenix.
All right, come to Phoenix. We'll go to a golf course.
My golf game's rusty, but we'll do something.
My golf game's very rusty. I found pickleball. So, my golf game's almost non-existent. You probably haven't found pickleball yet.
The Northwest, where am I doing that out here?
That's a good point. I love it. As always, coaches, thank you for spending the time with us. I'm Tyler. This is Edward. This is a Savvy Coaching Podcast. And until next time, enjoy your 2 hours on course.